Hey guys, this is Matt. Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to take a brief moment to talk about Mr. Brody Lee. This episode's coming out a few days after his passing, so I'm sure you've all heard by now, but if you haven't, Mr. Brody Lee, formerly known as Luke Harper, real name Jonathan Huber, has passed. I never met Mr. Brody personally, but as a lifelong wrestling fan, I could sit here and tell you about how he should have been included in the Bray Wyatt Randy Orton match at WrestleMania, or how great his ladder match was as Luke Harper with Dolph Ziggler. I could tell you about the amazing match he had in AEW with Jon Moxley, and how blessed my wife and I were to be at the Jericho 30 event to see his final match, that dog collar match with Cody. Those were all really great things, but it's 2 in the morning on December 27th, and for the last hour or so, I've just been reading Twitter and just reading the outpouring of love and respect for this man. And it doesn't really matter that we've lost a good worker, a great worker. What really matters is that the world has lost a wonderful, wonderful man. And I can't sit here and tell you any personal stories about John. But what I can tell you is that if you haven't had a chance to read all the wonderful things about him, you should take a moment and go read them, because everyone that's had contact with this guy has wonderful stories about him. Talks about how much he loved his family and his kids and how he put them before anything else, but how much he loved performing and how much he loved the fans. And I'm just going to read Chris Hero's tweet to you really briefly. There were a lot of people that wrote some long, heartfelt things, but I don't think I could get through them. I strongly recommend reading the message from his wife and the one from Bray Wyatt. But Chris Hero says, "If you've read or heard how good of a guy Brody was, please know that he was even greater. Kind, thoughtful, incredibly talented, hardworking, passionate, adored his family. My heart goes out to his wife, his sons, his family, friends, and fans. Love you, Brody. Rest in peace." And Kyle and Micah and I, I'm sure, will talk about this more. We're actually all on vacation at the moment, spending time with our families for the holiday. But I didn't want this to pass without anyone saying anything, because it's too important. He's too important of a human being to let it pass by with nothing said. So we'll touch more on it. But I just wanted to let his fans and family and friends know that we're praying for his family. And rest in peace, Mr. Brody. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to part two of our MVP of 2020. This one is about WWE. Plus, we have a couple of little bonus things at the end of the show that we're going to be able to give you from AEW and WWE.
Yeah, it's just to make you hang on through a WWE show. You gotta stay on for the bonus content.
Let's talk about the MVP of WWE of 2020.
Sure. I'm Micah, by the way. That's, yeah, Kyle. Thanks for the introductions, Matthew.
We're sitting here doing these shows back to back. I forgot.
Don't break the illusion.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
It's been a week since we recorded. What are you talking about?
Hi, I'm Matt Sin. I'm here with my little brother, Micah. Say hi, Micah.
Hi, Micah. Whatever. Let's get it over with.
And my cousin, Kyle. I've been out of practice a little bit, so you'll have to forgive me.
Well, maybe if you showed up to some of our shows, Matthew.
Yeah, hashtag Rona. There's a reason I haven't been there. So let's talk about the MVP of 2020 of WWE. And Kyle, we're going to let you start.
Of course.
Give me Drew McIntyre.
I mean, Mike has started off AEW by basically giving his prediction. So I'll pretty much go ahead and give mine. I think it's Drew McIntyre. I think he is the MVP. You can make an argument for Roman, and I'm sure we will. But, man, like, he's really the main reason why. I don't think he's the biggest ratings draw, per se. But he's carried the WWE Championship. He took it from Brock Lesnar. He won the Royal Rumble. Would be a huge star if fans were, you know, still in front of, you know, being able to go to the events and stuff. And really, he's the only one that they have cared enough about to not try to completely bury, even though that Orton, the ambulance match was pretty dumb.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, they've booked him as a champion. They've booked him well. They've actually, you know, like I said, they've actually put some care into not wanting to kill the guy and kill his career all over again. So, plus he's performed well in the ring and pretty much everything he's been given. And Lord knows he's been given crap all year, just like everything else in the program. And for what he's had to deal with this, you know, horrible year in WWE wrestling, for him to still be considered one of the highlights of the show, and for fans to even still like this guy on probably not just the WWE shills that, you know, are still watching the show and think it's good, but I think he's got the respect of people who are like AEW fans and who've pretty much stopped watching the show, still like Drew McIntyre, like myself. So I think he's the MVP. I think he's the best thing that's been on the show all year. And that's my reason.
Yeah, I think Drew McIntyre is one of the few stars that WWE has built. Like, really, like, feels like a star every time he's on the screen that they've built in recent memory. And I think for that alone, he's definitely near the top. I don't know that I would put him at number one for the year. Like, he's carried a lot of the company throughout the year, but I don't know. It's a tough one for me. He's definitely one of my current favorites in WWE. He's definitely done a great job with his, what would be now, I think, 2 title runs for the year. I think I probably would have put him at number one if he wouldn't have lost it to Randy Orton and then instantly gained it back. I think that really, like, lost a lot of momentum for him, for me. And maybe because it's like a recency bias, like, it's more like recently in my mind. But looking back at everything he's done through the year, beating Lesnar in the Royal Rumble, he definitely deserves to be there at the top for sure.
Drew McIntyre is the star that WWE built in 2020. Winning the title against Lesnar, winning the Royal Rumble, which I called, by the way, you can go back and listen to that, and carrying the title basically the entire year. Yeah. He has really done a lot for WWE. I will say that his challengers haven't really been all that strong. Other than Lesnar and Orton, you had guys like friggin' Dolph Ziggler. And that's fine. Nothing against Dolph Ziggler, who is an amazing worker. But no one was buying into the fact that Dolph Ziggler was going to beat Drew McIntyre. And then you had stuff like, his Randy Orton stuff has been great, but they wrestled like 5 times. And that's a WWE problem. That's not a Drew McIntyre problem, but that doesn't make for a good title run. It's just, it's annoying. Plus, they hot potatoed the belt back and forth. So I do love me some Drew McIntyre. And I think that he absolutely has an argument to be the MVP this year. But let's talk about some more people.
Well, I do have to say,
yeah, go ahead.
Just when he thought he couldn't get any better, they gave him a sword this year.
And so his sword intro.
Sword that comes out and stabs into the stage. So.
That is pretty great. So
he literally stabs the Thunderdome every time he comes out.
That's true. Drew Stabentire. Micah.
Yes.
Your name is Micah Vontavious Porter.
I am very important to this show. So
give me.
You don't get any arguments with me. I am the best.
Give me the MVP of 2020. Montel Vontavious Porter, MVP.
Yeah, so I'll be honest with you. I was super psyched to see MVP come back in the Rumble. He was really big for me whenever I was actually watching and enjoying WWE television. And to see him come back, and initially he was used pretty poorly, right? Like, he got squashed in some pretty bad matches. But when they finally put him in the position he needed to be, where he was the mouthpiece for a group of just super, super talented wrestlers who maybe didn't have the greatest mic skills, looking at you, Bobby Lashley, and kind of just let him slide into that perfect role. And he has really carried a lot of these COVID shows for WWE. I mean, the storyline with his group and everything, and he's just so charismatic of a guy, man. Like, anytime he's on the screen, he makes you want to keep watching. So I really don't think he's the MVP of the year, but he's been very, very important for keeping WWE television as entertaining as it can be during these COVID shows, for sure. During this COVID year, really.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely been, as far as like a mouthpiece, one of the best on WWE programming this year. So wrestling wise, he obviously hasn't been, you know, the MVP, but he's carried one of their, you know, most protective stables on the program, even though, like, I still don't know if they're a heel or a face group. They've kind of flip-flopped back and forth, as has everybody on WWE TV. But he's carried, I mean, he's given Bobby Lashley something to kind of grab onto. He's given Shelton Benjamin new life, Cedric Alexander. And they're probably the top stable in the company right now. I can't really think of anybody else at the moment. If there's another one, I don't think you can count Roman's, you know, group. I think it's just him and Jay. But they're probably the top heel group on the program. And he's really championed that whole thing. And if you have to give him an MVP, you know, that's probably the only way I can see him getting it.
So the reason that MVP is on this list is because he has been part of some of the worst bullcrap all year, and he and his group has remained so obnoxiously entertaining. Do you know what MVP has done this year? MVP walked into probably the worst booking of the year in Raw Underground and made that stupid, boring, piece of crap segment entertaining, because MVP, along with Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley and later Cedric Alexander, is wildly entertaining. MVP is so, so, so good at what he does. You know what else MVP has had to do with this year? Retribution. MVP has had to deal with Retribution, but it didn't matter, because MVP was still very entertaining, even when Retribution was probably the worst faction possibly of all time. The oddities exist, but just the Retribution is miserably bad. But you know who is still entertaining even when he's having to deal with Retribution? MVP. This guy came in the Royal Rumble to get a few second pop, which he did. He stayed around to wrestle Rey Mysterio, his son's favorite wrestler. And they thought, Vince saw, you know what, this guy, he's pretty good. Maybe I should have pushed him properly the first time around. I'm going to push him now. And you know what? He's done a great job. So I think MVP absolutely deserves the spot on this list.
I mean, it also helps when you're as protective as the Herb business has been.
Right.
So I think that's a contributing factor. And also Lashley has been, Lord knows he's been protected like a precious piece of gold or something. Like, he,
right,
constantly is not, you know, I still don't think he's been pinned all year. He's destroyed everybody in his wake.
He got pinned by Drew McIntyre, and I think that's it.
Yeah. So that tells you right there what they think of him. I'm pretty sure everybody else he's either beaten or stayed away from, you know, losing matches or something like that. So it helps when you have someone like that in your stable, yeah, and you're protected. We might be telling a different story if Retribution had come out and beaten the Hurt Business up, or if, you know, he had suffered some other horrible storyline or something like that. They've been pretty protected, and I think that's helped him a lot.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Kyle. Give me why Asuka should be the MVP of WWE.
She's definitely been, I mean, she's been, you know, she's definitely been a workhorse, if anything else. She's, you know, throughout the pandemic, she's been a constant on WWE TV. She's been on both shows, you know, at one point. So she was definitely a very utilized talent. She's obviously now the Raw Women's Champion. She took over as champion once Becky, you know, revealed her pregnancy. And Asuka's pretty much carried the women's division since then. But she's also been involved in a lot of bad stuff. like, I guess more as of late, I have a bad recency bias too, because I've seen all the bad stuff that she's been going through on TV with Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. So it's hard for me to say she's the MVP when, you know, I've been seeing this stuff on there. She's been great, but it's like I said, it really helps, like in MVP's case, when you're not involved in all the stupid crap or when you're not being buried. I mean, like I said, I saw in a segment this year, a couple weeks ago, when Asuka and Lana beat up the heels, Shayna ran after them and they tucked tail and ran in a 2-on-1 situation. So, I mean, there's stuff like that where it's kind of drilled in my head, because there's been a lot of that this year in WWE. But Asuka still, through all of that, can almost always put on a good match when she has the time and, you know, actually pretty much matches that aren't on TV, because let's be real, they don't even care about the matches that are on TV anymore. So when she has a match with, like, say, a Sasha Banks, or gets a segment where she has to be entertaining, she usually knocks it out of the park. So if I had to give it to her for some reason, it would be for that, and for, you know, taking the mantle of carrying the women's division while Becky kind of took, you know, was on the sideline this year.
Yeah, I could definitely see a case for Asuka being MVP of the year. For sure. I think, really, in my opinion, if I had to choose a division for being the MVP of WWE for the year, I would probably choose the women's division, because I think it's been more consistently good, because you have the Sasha and the Bayley, you have Asuka doing all the great things she does. Earlier in the year, you had Becky Lynch. Yeah, they have some issues. But, I mean, name a time that Asuka's on your television you're not entertained. I mean, she's just fantastic. She's always entertaining. She's extremely, like, a reliably good match. You can put her against anybody. You can put Asuka versus Braun Strowman. You still have a good match. So, yeah, I would probably put Asuka at maybe 2 or 3 on the list, for sure. I think she's great.
I absolutely love Asuka. And I think that the stuff that she did when she won the title, she was out there dancing for no reason, chanting in Japanese. She's just absolutely hilarious.
All the commentary? Like you said,
yeah, she's so good. And she doesn't even hardly speak English. She spoke Japanese on commentary, but it didn't matter. She's just incredible. I think that of the era where there were no fans at all, even before the Thunderdome, especially when there was no sound from those fans being piped in, I think Asuka was easily the MVP of that era. Easily. Because she made you forget. Because she was constantly running her mouth. She was constantly making noise. Asuka is just so darn entertaining. Her stuff with Kairi Sane at the beginning of the year was so good. Her women's title run has been mostly good until now. But the year's mostly over because she's having a feud with friggin' Nia Jax. But I think Asuka has a legitimate reason to be picked number one. I really do. I think that she has been wildly entertaining, and I think she's been the star of the best division in WWE this year. I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right, Micah, keeping it in the women's division.
All right.
Bayley. Tell me why Bayley.
I'd say give me Bayley.
Yeah.
Because I tell you what, she might be number one for me. She really might. I really like Bayley. I think she's been probably the most protected wrestler of the year. Like, yeah, she lost in the long run, but looking at her reign, how long was she SmackDown Women's Champ? Like
a year and a half, it seemed like.
It was really long. She
super long.
She lost it temporarily and then gained it back. I don't remember the exact date. I'll look it up actually while you're talking.
I think she had it for over 350 days concurrently. I may be wrong. But no, her feud with Sasha, even though, yeah, it went on a little too long, the tag team run that she had with Sasha was great. Honestly, like everything she's done this year, I've really enjoyed. I think that she has rightfully been super well protected up until her loss to Sasha. I liked Face Bayley, which I think we had at the very beginning of this year. With the wacky inflatable arm flailing tube men. And then you had the heel turn, which I thought was great. I wasn't sure how it was going to work when it first happened, but I think she's done a great job of pulling off the character. And I think that if Bayley weren't on WWE television this year, it would have been much, much worse for sure. And I think she's a person a lot of people tune in to watch. So honestly, I might would put her at my number one. We'll see.
If I had to say, I think Sasha and Bayley, more so than just Bayley by herself.
Yeah, together for sure, yeah.
I think together they were, because much like Asuka, they kind of carried the other half of the women's division this year. And really, Asuka, Bayley, and Sasha are pretty much the only ones who have kind of been constant with the women's division. Shayna could have been better, but they really haven't booked her very well. And obviously Nia, who cares? Everybody else in the division has kind of been, you know, tossed around and jobbed out and given bad material. I mean, Alexa with The Fiend is probably the next, you know, biggest story element, but they really haven't even done well with that, in my opinion. But the Bayley Sasha storyline throughout the year has kind of, you know, been the one constant of the women's division. And though Bayley was champion for most of the year, she really wasn't, in my opinion, much without Sasha. I think them working together, much like, you know, Omega and Kenny kind of needed each other to kind of put themselves in this category. I think Sasha Omega needs to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay. I think they kind of belong together because I don't see Bayley by herself being the MVP, but her, the work that she's done with Sasha and the story that they did, even though like it was long overdue, it's been drawn out forever, not necessarily their fault, but when they were given the opportunity and when they've been on TV and been given segments to do, they've pretty much done it pretty well. So I think they definitely deserve, you know, some recognition for that.
So Bayley originally won the title in May of 2019 and held the title for 140 days. She lost it to Charlotte for 5 days and won it back in October of 2019. She held that title for 380 days before losing it to Sasha.
And she had the tag belts, what, twice in that duration?
At least once. It's crazy. So, very, very good year for Bayley. So before we get to our last one, let's talk about a couple honorable mentions. And the number one that was really, really difficult for me to leave out, and I'm going to explain to you guys why, is Roman Reigns. And the reason that I left out Roman Reigns is, for one, he was out because of COVID for a long time. And two, his babyface stuff at the beginning of the year was absolute garbage. Remember when he wrestled King Corbin for like 4 months? Yeah, part of that was this year. His heel stuff has been the best thing going on for WWE this year, but that hasn't even been half the year. I don't think it's fair to put him there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. It's totally, totally fair in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's why you leave out the Eddie Kingstons on the AEW.
Yeah, that's why Becky Lynch isn't on this list, because for the first three or four months, she was great. She's the hottest thing in all of wrestling, and then she left. So, I mean, she left in March, right after Mania.
Yeah, so it's almost like in college football, if you only played like 6 games, you shouldn't make the playoffs. Looking at you, Ohio State.
So that's why I left Roman Reigns out. That's why I left Becky Lynch out. And I only left Sasha Banks out because I think that I didn't put her with Bayley, but I do get what Kyle is saying. I agree. I also left out AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. AJ, my personal favorite wrestler, Daniel Bryan, one of the best workers in the world. Just because they haven't, even though AJ's matches have been absolute highlights, he hasn't been at the top of the card all year, and Daniel Bryan has been missing a large portion of the year. So that's why those guys are out. But number five, I think that they rehabilitated him pretty well after what I think is the worst match of all time last year. So Kyle, number five, give me Bray Wyatt.
I had a feeling you were going to go here. it's tough because The Fiend should be legendary. I think The Fiend and Bray Wyatt should be an awesome character. There's been times where he's been good, but man, they've just, as a result of just the horrible booking they've had, he's been a lot of crap. And I mean, there's a lot of people who don't give Bray Wyatt any credit, mainly because of his in-ring work. But I honestly think he could be really good if they would let him be good. But he is kind of pigeonholed with his character that doesn't sell. That, like, all his matches are gimmicked. So there, I mean, have we ever really seen Bray Wyatt have to work? Like, so, I mean, it's, he had a good match with Daniel Bryan. But other than that, like I don't think it was this year, but he had the awful match with Seth, like that awful program before, you know,
Seth was terrible stuff with Braun Strowman.
Yeah. So, and that was this year. And even since he's gotten Alexa on his side, like that was like such an opportunity. I feel like they've squandered. They just haven't really done anything with it. He's gone. He's feuding with Randy Orton right now. And like I said, I think a lot of this is because I'm having a recency bias with WWE because she's been so bad toward this. I mean, it's been pretty bad all year, but really in the second half of this year, it's been so. Once I got rid of Paul Heyman and Bruce Prichard's been doing both these shows, it's just been horrible. And Vince is rewriting the shows, and we've had our complaints about WWE, but I mean, I feel like Bray could be like his potential to be MVP is. So it's there. It's there for sure. He's a great character. He's put 100% into any role that he's done. He's, you know, I don't ever, when I watch TV, disbelieve Bray Wyatt. I feel like he is just the complete embodiment of any character he's done. So when, you can't fault the guy for not, you know, living his gimmick or, you know, doing it to the fullest. Like he's 100% for sure. But I can't give him MVP just because he's been in so many bad things, and it's just the way he's booked. It could be so great, but it's not. So I can't give him MVP, but if you had to give it to him, you'd give it to him just being for being entertaining and just totally living his character pretty much all year.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. He has the opportunity or had the opportunity to be the next Undertaker, the next big gimmicked wrestler, the next big character in wrestling. And he's been booked so poorly from the start. It's really taken away all of the shine and the luster. He puts together consistently entertaining segments with his Firefly Funhouse stuff. I think the Firefly Funhouse match from earlier this year is one of the most entertaining things in wrestling this year for sure. Really enjoyed that. But I mean, you have to look at the overall arcing story of The Fiend, and that is poor booking, that is gimmick matches that just don't really turn out that well, and not a whole lot of work, like actual wrestling. So I definitely wouldn't put him as MVP. I think it's fair to put him in the top five, but I think number five is a good place for him. For sure.
See, I don't think you guys are giving him enough credit. He's been in some stinkers, but he himself has been obnoxiously entertaining. The Firefly Funhouse gimmick has been one of the high spots in all of WWE, and that's a big part of because he has been controlling that narrative, and it hasn't been controlled by Vince McMahon.
Yeah, I give Bray Wyatt all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
WWE, however, has taken his character and dragged it through the mud.
Basically. That's fair. That's fair. But I do think that he has done a lot. And I think he's had, for the most part, a good year. Not the year that he should have had. His Braun Strowman stuff was weird. Losing to Goldberg was really stupid. But
yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Yeah. But I think for Bray Wyatt, I think he's done a good job. So I think he did deserve to be on the list. But let's talk about MVPs. Let's talk about anyone else that you guys might want to add before we actually do voting. Kyle, do you have anyone that you want to add to the list?
I mean, honestly, I'm kind of surprised you didn't include Roman Reigns. I get why. I mean, you gave your reasons. And you are right.
He was out for like, four months, I think. He missed WrestleMania. That's a big deal. And his babyface stuff was abysmal.
But man, he's come back like
he really has.
He's almost made up for it with this with what he's done toward the end of the year with this new character.
Yeah. 2021 will be Roman Reigns' year. I mean, I don't think if he keeps this up, I don't think there's any chance anyone could catch him.
Yeah, and I'm looking through the roster here. I'm not seeing not really seeing anybody else who's lit the world on fire that would kind of constitute that. Yeah, there's really not a ton of people to kind of. I mean, you could say Otis. Otis had a good beginning of the year, and like I mean, I said on the show, I said on the show this week that you know, Otis, you can't fault the guy for. I mean, Vince is, you know, apparently doesn't think he can work, but my God, he was like the most over thing on SmackDown at the beginning of the year. It was basically carrying the show. Yeah. I mean, but they've taken everything away from him and now he's nothing. And he's still entertaining, but he's just not what he could have been and what he was at the beginning of the year. But man, if he would have carried the momentum he started with at the beginning of the year, and as we were heading into COVID with the stuff he was doing with Mandy, and you know, with Tucker and even winning Money in the Bank, he's been a big part of the year. So I mean, I think you could give it to him. And also, Matt, you're probably gonna hate me. I think you could possibly talk about Seth Rollins here if you're gonna talk about. Yeah. I mean, he's been in crap.
It's fair, yeah.
But
he has done some good stuff though.
And I mean, talking about one of the biggest stories of the year was the story between him and Mysterio. Obviously, they had the eye for an eye match, which was just weird. Like I said, it's hard to give these guys credit because they've been in so much crap because the bookies have been so horrible.
Yeah.
But he's been a good character on TV. I hate to say it, but I've kind of enjoyed him as the Messiah guy. It obviously could have been written a lot better, but he's been a thorn in the Mysterio family side and he's been a dirtbag the entire time. And I feel like the show's kind of missing something that he's been gone the last couple weeks. You know, obviously being with his newborn baby. So I think you kind of say Seth Rollins, you know, is possibly in the conversation. So I think Otis, Seth Rollins, and possibly Roman Reigns would be my picks. As honorable mentions, at least possibly, like I said, I think Drew is the hands down MVP, but if you had to mention some guys, I think they deserve mentioning for sure.
Yeah, it is a shame that we're having a tough time finding somebody that's consistently booked throughout the year.
It's true.
I mean, Seth Rollins, I think could definitely be on the list.
And not from their, you know, the fault of their own. Like it's all
not through their own
out fault. Of their hands. And what's kind of been the problem with WWE, as we've said, and I believe we said on the show this week, they got one of the most talented rosters ever in wrestling history. I think everybody, for the most part, can work on this program. They've got talent out there that can put on entertaining matches. And even guys who could be great characters. And it's like they're just squandered constantly by the people who write this stupid show.
Yeah, it's a shame. Roman Reigns, I feel like, has been great recently. He hasn't been there enough of the year to, I feel like, deservingly get in the top five. Otis, I could see for the first 6 months, but they've just, you know, had something against Otis. I don't know what their issue was with Otis, but he's just been taken down the toilet. There's a lot of people that I think are consistently entertaining throughout the year. AJ Styles being one of them, The New Day, all of them,
even though Xavier Woods was injured for the big portion of the year, but Kofi Kingston and Big E have been consistently entertaining throughout the year. Sami Zayn, he was out for a while with COVID, but consistently entertaining. Daniel Bryan, consistently entertaining. So there's a lot of people out there that are honorable mentions, I feel like, in my opinion. But I can't think of anybody else that I would say is deserving of the top one or two spot. Unfortunately, because Otis should be on the list because his first half of the year was so good. The New Day should be on the list, but they got split up, and that really, you know, that affects it for me. Roman Reigns will probably be number one next year if they keep up at the rate they're going. And yeah, it's a shame that nobody really has any consistency. But you know, that's what happens when you don't control your own narrative and you have a room of writers and a cranky old man.
So, yeah. So let's vote.
Okay.
And Kyle, I'll let you start. Who is Drew the McIntyre. MVP? Would you like to add anything else? Or you just want to say Drew McIntyre?
I mean, I pretty much said what my opinion is on him. He's
been
the only guy on the show who's not really, I don't think there's been like a moment where, other than the ambulance match where we said it was booked horribly and he needed help from, what was it, four other legends to beat Randy Orton, and then went and lost to a Hell in a Cell. Other than that, though, I mean, the guy's been booked strong all year, destroyed Brock Lesnar, and has rid us from that from the whole year. So that could have won the award on its own. He's, like I said, he's been constant throughout the year. He's done good work. He's just been awesome, been cutting great promos. And I think he could be better too. So like there's been times where he's cut promos where I'm like, I wish he had a little bit more fire to him and stuff like that. So I think he still can get better. But still, he's been great and they've been booking him great. I think they just keep pushing him. And once fans are back in the building, give him some good programs. And I think he could be MVP of next year. I think Roman's going to be obviously a big part of that, but of that conversation. But I think Drew, he's just going to be, he's going to be the guy for the next couple of years. So I think for sure this year, he's hands down MVP for me.
All right. Micah, what you think?
I think I'm going to go with Bayley. I really do. I think she's been the most consistent throughout the year. If I could put Sasha with her, I think I would. But if she wasn't there, I would still choose Bayley. Just because they've kind of took a little bit of the shine off of Drew for me. I think Bayley's been the most consistently good. And carried a lot more, I guess, than in my head than Drew has. But again, it may be a little bit of recency bias. Who knows? But I would lock in Bayley.
I think one thing we can say, and we're all big AEW fans, and we're kind of fed up with WWE. I think one thing that we can say in WWE that they have over AEW is the booking of their women's division.
Yeah.
And I think that's telling, because I'm also going to pick a woman, but it's not Bayley. So there's been two women that's picked as the MVP, and I'm picking Asuka. Because Asuka has been, as I mentioned, so entertaining through the entire thing. Even when she wasn't doing anything. If she was just there to yell some Japanese and dance, it was still great. I love everything about Asuka. I think there's an argument to be made that she is the greatest female worker of all time. I really do. And I think that her 2020 has been absolutely stellar. And I think my 2 and 3, and I don't know what order I'd put them in, would be Bayley and Drew McIntyre, because both of them have just had such an amazing year. But I have to go with Asuka, and I think that I'm also going to go with the WWE Women's Division, because man, just good, really good stuff.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. Now before we get out of here, we're going to do some little awards.
Okay.
So we're going to match of the year, and the reason we didn't do this in the AEW show is because I was going to do a single match of the year, and after we stopped recording, you guys were like, no, let's do both. So let's do both.
Okay.
So let's do our WWE match of the year, and Kyle, I will let you start.
in my opinion, I think it has to be Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso.
Which one?
The first one.
Yeah, it was terrific, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Hell in a Cell, we talked about it, that in our review of being pretty much a copy of the first match. I think the ending was done pretty well, but I think if they had managed to condense both of those matches together, it could have been like one of the greatest matches in WWE history. Because the ending, it was basically the same match. The first match was essentially an I Quit match. They just didn't have the stipulation. And what was it? The Uso threw in the towel or whatever for the first one.
Right.
It was basically a refusal to quit. And that's what led to it. Even though the match, it wasn't that great, honestly, from a standpoint of like, you know, obviously we're going to talk, I would assume, what the AEW match of the year is going to be. One of the two has got to be at the top for all of us. But so definitely not that type of work rate for those AEW top matches. But the storytelling in this match was so great. And it was really the only thing that WWE, and give them credit. They did a good job telling the story, showing all the footage of them as kids and stuff. Although I wish they wouldn't have used their real names and stuff, because it just like, it's one of the things WWE does where they have to make it too real. And it's like,
right,
okay, we get that they were kids, but you don't have to, you know, it's call them by what's Roman Reigns' real name? I forget it. Joe? It's Joe and all this, whatever. Like,
everybody loves the word shoot nowadays.
Yeah, so we could have done without that. But other than that, like all the old footage they showed of them growing up together was great. But that's something that WWE can't book. They can't book that history. They can't book the reality of those, you know, those two being family members, to a point where like Roman was beating the guy so badly toward the end of that match. I got emotional. I did. Yeah. I've watched wrestling for so many years. It's been a long time. I think, like I said, the only thing I could compare it to of like almost like legit getting emotional during a segment in recent history was the Cody strapping MJF segment, where you can't fake that. You can't fake the strap hits. You can't fake the emotion of the moment. And you couldn't fake it with these guys. Like it was really there. Like there was tension there and they just did it terrifically. And with all this crap that WWE has booked this year, it was something that they couldn't screw up. It was something real, probably the realest thing on WWE TV all year. And I think it's hands down the best match WWE has done this year, and probably one of the best matches they've done in the last couple of years, in my opinion, as far as a storytelling standpoint.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I'm going to pick a match that's actually from that same show. And I think it's fair to say that Roman Reigns
versus I figured. If not this match, it was the other one that was on the show.
Yeah. So Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso was just so, so, so good. But I like work rate stuff, right? I like seeing stuff that I've never seen before. My favorite match of 2020 is AJ Styles versus Sami Zayn versus Jeff Hardy. And the match where Jeff Hardy got his earlobe attached to a ladder with a set of handcuffs. I absolutely loved everything about that match. AJ Styles is my favorite worker in the world.
So your favorite worker is Jeff Hardy's earlobe? I know you just said AJ Styles, but you just said worker, and then you went and talked about his earlobe tied to the ladder or whatever.
It was so great. Sami Zayn pulling one over on AJ. It was just so funny and so good. Sami Zayn is the biggest dork in the world, but he's still wildly entertaining. I loved everything about this match. And look, man, this year we've had Daniel Bryan versus Drew Gulak. Remember that? Remember AJ versus Daniel Bryan on SmackDown in the finals of the Intercontinental Championship match?
Yep.
Do you remember just last month, I believe it was, Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre? That match was awesome. There actually really has been a lot of stuff. Seth Rollins has been a part of a lot of really great matches, even though the storylines have been bad. We talked about it. Daniel Bryan versus The Fiend in the strap match was good. But this triple threat in the ladder match, which I love ladder matches for one, but it was just so unique, and they did so many things in this match that I've never seen before. That is the match I'm going to pick for WWE Match of the Year.
So I am going to pick a match that none of you have mentioned, not even in passing.
Okay.
And I agree with both of you that the matches you chose are some of the best, definitely top five matches of the year. But what I think is the best match of 2020 is the 2020 Men's Royal Rumble match.
Oh, it was good. It was real good.
I think that's one of the best booked Royal Rumbles I've ever seen. That was probably the thing that got me back in the swing of WWE after the terrible, terrible Hell in a Cell. Drew McIntyre was made a star in that match. Brock Lesnar did exactly what he should have done in that match. I really enjoyed it. I was watching that match with people who have never watched wrestling before, and they're like, wow, this is really cool. I was like, I know. Don't tune in for Hell in a Cell, though, because you'll be disappointed. No, right. It was definitely my favorite match of the year. I think it was, honestly, one of the best book matches of the year. I do think that during the pandemic, they should have done more matches like Roman versus Jay. They did it a little bit with Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens at WrestleMania. It was very good. But yeah, if I had to pick a match for the year for WWE, I would go with the Men's Royal Rumble match for sure.
All right. I 100% agree with that. It was so good. Let's talk about AEW now.
Can you guess what my favorite one is?
I have a feeling that we're going to agree on this, but give me your AEW match of 2020.
I'm going to tell you about my favorite match of all times, what I'm going to tell you about. Okay. I'm going to tell you about the match where my favorite wrestler, Hangman Adam Page, and his sidekick, Kenny Omega, were able to successfully defend the AEW Tag Team Championships against the Young Bucks. Those dastardly heels, the Young Bucks. This match had so much story in it for me. This match had me more invested than any match I've ever watched. I love both of these teams. I love the story, as we said. I said over and over in the last episode, I am all about it. I love the fact that Hangman was the one that came out on top on this one. I love the fact that even though the Young Bucks were being massive heels, Kenny was kind of teasing being a heel towards Hangman, that still good prevailed, and our favorite cowboy stood tall after this match. I loved it. It gave me all the feels. It was, what was it, like a 38-minute match?
It was long. Over 30 minutes.
It never felt like it. I'm not huge on big slogs of matches, but it didn't feel long. It was perfect in every way, shape, and form. And it's not only the match of 2020 for me, it is my favorite match of all time. It is taking the spot of Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio at Halloween Havoc. So that's how good I think this match is.
This was my favorite match of the year as well. This match got 6 stars from Dave Meltzer. And the reason this match was better than Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso is because this match had those same story beats that was emotional, and it was built. And it was built before the match, it was built during the match, and it continued after the match. But this was the greatest tag team match of all time. And I think it's fair to say it's one of the greatest matches to ever be put on American television. Everything about this match was absolutely perfect. There were no botches. There were no spots in this match that were boring. This match was part spot fest, part story, part technical classic. There has not been a match better this year than Kenny Omega and Hangman Page versus the Young Bucks at Revolution. Period. Kyle, do you agree?
I mean, you know, I love, you know, great storytelling and, you know, just a huge grudge. So I think my pick has got to be Matt Hardy versus Sammy Guevara. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I think it's unanimous like here.
Almost die, huh?
I think it's unanimous here. It's got to be. I mean, it got 6 stars from Dave Meltzer, for God's sakes. It's
it wasn't even in the Tokyo Dome.
I know.
Yeah, and honestly, probably should have been a main event of the show. Obviously, Moxley and Jericho was the main event.
Yeah.
It was the last big match, I think, that where we had fans in the crowd before this horrible. It was you know, the what seems like forever ago where we actually had a normal life. It was like the last bit of that, where they had a full crowd of people. But yeah, just great storytelling. Obviously, they had the tease of, you know, was Hangman going to turn heel? You know, there was friction between the Elite. They had that going on. And then, you know, it was Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, the single stars, trying to hold on and carry these tag titles as a team versus the veteran team of the Young Bucks, who are also like their best friends and knew everything about each other. So there were counters, there were near falls. There was, you know, as Matt said, like just crazy sequences, you know, just a long pay-per-view. You know, it's going to be hard to top this. This is AEW's best match, you know, ever. But yeah, it's way up there. Is one of the, also, I don't, we've kind of mentioned one of the biggest things about AEW's was they were out to prove that tag team wrestling mattered. Because, right. I mean, as we said, FTR was not here at this point. They are at WWE, and they were trying their hardest to make tag team wrestling relevant. And they were unsuccessful, not, you know, due to their, you know, anything they were doing. WWE didn't believe it was, and still don't believe that it's, you know, anything to have concern about. They just don't. I mean, the women's tag team division is a joke. The men's is, you know, they have matches, but let's be honest, they break up teams left and right. They compose teams of single stars. They just don't care. And I mean, I know we're talking about a match where Omega and Hangman, you know, single stars came together to be the tag team champions, but they made sure that they made them work together as a team. And they just showed that, you know, tag team wrestling was something that could, you know, tear the house down, that could be relevant again. And yeah, I think it's hands down AEW's best match, not of the year, of the company. And it's going to be hard to top. So, yeah, it's up there. And I'd like to hear an argument of one that could be better for match of the year for AEW.
I don't think there is. I do think that the second best match is FTR versus the Young Bucks. And while I was there live with Micah and Riley and B-Dubs, I was the only person rooting for FTR. But by the end of the match, I knew the Young Bucks had to win. I just knew it. And they did. And it was the right call. But can we talk about, and there's been so many good matches, guys. Cody, all the Cody stuff with Darby, freaking John Moxley stuff against Brody Lee and Eddie Kingston, just great. But can we give an honorable mention to MJF versus Jungle Boy, Double or Nothing earlier this year?
Oh, yeah, for
How
sure.
How great was that? No, I did not expect, I mean, I expect this match to be good.
That's technical match of the year.
Yeah, it was like an old school categories. Technical. Yeah, it was so good. I absolutely loved it.
Terrific. That was a very good match, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Darby Allin and Cody Rhodes for the TNT title.
Yeah.
It's also good.
I literally jumped out of my seat when Darby won. It was so unexpected and so cool to see. So nice to be there live. It was just terrific. So emotional.
Yep. And I'm sure there's a lot from earlier in the year that we've forgotten that were just fantastic matches. But let's be honest, guys, there's so many good ones.
Yeah.
I mean,
what we love about AEW.
Anytime Pentagon and Rey Fénix have been in the ring against anybody. Right. It's one of the best matches of the year. So, I mean, there's so many talented people in AEW that it's crazy the matches they put on.
So let's talk about, briefly, because we praised AEW and WWE to an extent. Let's talk about the worst worker of the year.
Luther.
Okay. So that's Micah's vote. Tell me,
all right,
tell
guys, me why. See y'all later.
Tell me why.
I mean, do I have to? Have you watched any of his matches?
Yeah.
Poor guy. So Matthew was telling me, he was like, we have to pick somebody that actually matters.
So, I didn't mean it to sound so negative.
I don't know. If I have to pick somebody else that actually like is on TV regularly, I think we could probably all agree Nia Jax.
Yeah.
If for no other reason than for the fact that, number one, she hurts people. And number two, I haven't seen her have a good match literally ever.
Yeah.
So.
Even against good workers.
I mean,
I mean, if anybody deserves to be sent down to the PC for more training.
For real.
They sent Keith Lee and Otis before they sent Nia Jax.
However,
just let that sink in.
She's provided so much content to Botchamania.
That's true.
So yeah, there's the obvious answers like Luther, where he's I'm sorry, man. He seems like a real nice guy, but he's past his prime. He doesn't deserve that spot in AEW, unfortunately. But you know, everybody has to have a jobber. So if they want to stick him on there, that's fine. Nia Jax is somebody they put in the spotlight of the women's division for quite some time now, and she has absolutely no business being there. So realistically, I probably would pick Nia Jax just for the fact that they're trying to shove her down everybody's throat as a star in the women's division. And I'll be honest with you, she doesn't even deserve to be running the Houston County Farm Center. So,
ouch. I'm going with Mr. Braun Strowman. And the reason I'm going with Mr. Braun Strowman isn't the fact that he's the worst worker of 2020. It's the fact that he was pushed more than anyone else deserved to be pushed. Or he was pushed more than he deserved, more so than anybody else was. Braun Strowman had the worst WWE championship reign of all time. Period. It was miserable. He beat Goldberg in 2 minutes, which was stupid. The only reason he beat Goldberg is Roman Reigns couldn't be there, and Goldberg was done. He had a horrendously bad feud with Miz and Morrison, which how you can have something unentertaining when the Miz and Morrison are involved, I'll never know. And then he had that bullcrap with Bray Wyatt, only to, instead of lose the title to Bray Wyatt, lost the title to a returning Roman Reigns, who returned mid-match. So Braun Strowman is the worst worker of this year, and I hope that he is very happy doing something else next year, making a lot of money. I don't want to wish bad on him, but I don't want him on my TV.
So, I think I've got a tie.
Okay.
And I'm going a different route. So, this isn't necessarily like, because obviously Braun Strowman and Nia Jax, they're easy pickings. They're just not good in the ring. I mean, if we're talking just like horrible, we could go to like Billy Kay or like Big Swole or somebody like that, or like, you know, they just isn't successful in the ring. But I'm going to take it a step further, and I'm going to give the award to two people that had very high expectations and have not delivered, as being the worst workers, and both are in AEW.
Whoa.
Yes. I think I have an argument for both of them, but I was just thinking about it. And I was like, I can't say one without saying the other, because I think they both, you know, had issues. So the first is Miro.
Okay. That's absolutely fair.
Totally fair.
Because we've seen what he's capable of. He was, you know, awesome in his early career in WWE. But, I don't exactly know the timeline. I think it was, I'm not sure if it was end of 2019 or if it was the beginning of the year when he had the stuff with Lashley and Lana. Do you guys, it's been forever. So my timeline's all off.
It was this year. Yeah.
It was this year? This year,
because the whole program lasted like 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was part of Paul Heyman's thing, but I remember fans being a part of it. So it might have been early this year, maybe end of last year, but he was part of that whole thing. I mean, it wasn't really his fault, but he also didn't do well in that, you know, scenario. Then obviously he got laid off during COVID, went to AEW as a big signing. And though he hasn't been horrible per se, he hasn't been good.
Yeah.
He's had moments where he's come out and just been the angry Rusev, basically, where, you know, you've seen that glimmer of hope or possibility. We talked about it this past week on the show, but all in all, what we would expect from somebody of his, you know, potential hasn't hit the mark. And so his work hasn't been great either. He's had matches where he's, you know, borderline gotten hurt or, you know, botched things in AEW. So even his in-ring work hasn't been up to par of what he's capable of. So just on potential and what we would expect from somebody, I would have to say Miro. And then also in the same vein, I got to say Matt Hardy. Because if you think at the beginning of the year, or when he first made his AEW debut, it was right at the beginning of the pandemic. So the fans were, you know, they got taken out of the equation. So like it kind of hurt his debut, not really his fault, but think about all the goofy stuff that he did with, you know, the Inner Circle, which was entertaining for sure, but it didn't really go anywhere. It led to a feud with him and Sami Zayn, and Lord knows we want to forget about those matches. Obviously he had this, the Stadium Stampede that he was involved in, which was great.
Sammy Guevara, not Sami Zayn, but yes, I agree.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sammy Guevara. Sorry. you know, the one Sammy and the one of two Sammys in the wrestling business.
Right.
He had Stadium Stampede, which was fun, and he's been involved in some entertaining segments, but to where he is now over the course of the year, like into where his potential was coming into, you know, he was like one of the hottest signings. And I mean, look how people freaked out when he debuted and were like, oh man, Broken Matt, he's going to be great. And he kind of has declined throughout the year. And part of it is he's not, you know, he's not going to be a main eventer or anything like that, but Jericho has taken the back seat as well, but he's still been very relevant and very like kind of kept his pace of like the quality of the segments he's been in, quality of matches. It's pretty much, even though he's taken a back seat, he's kept a steady pace of like, you know, where his, the quality of the segments and the matches he's been in, whereas Matt Hardy's really haven't been there. So I would have to say Miro and Matt Hardy are my two, not probably worst workers, but weakest workers of the year. Of, you know, just based on potential of, they probably could do better. Yeah, they're just kind of disappointments to me, I would say. So I'm not going to go based on just the crap, because, man, we could list a whole bunch of people from WWE to go under that category. But just from potential alone and disappointment on where they are now, I'd say Miro, Matt Hardy.
Okay. I understand that. I do. I think Matt really struggled from the fact that there are no fans. I think the Broken gimmick really needs to have fans.
And you think that, like, I think a lot of the stuff he wanted to do was it needs the crowd there to react, and he wants to do the cinematic matches more, and it's just not viable in this COVID era. I mean, they did stuff early on as an alternative. I mean, we obviously had the Undertaker AJ Styles match. And they've done some stuff like that, and obviously the Stadium Stampede was one, but that was early on in the year. They haven't really done much of that as of late. So it's kind of just been a steady decline all year for Matt.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, I think that's it. I think we've run through everything. Anything else you guys want to add before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered everything.
Okay.
AEW cool. Good, WWE bad is a good way to sum up the year as well.
It's sad, though. It's sad. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been...
They did it to themselves, so...
Yes, they did. They did. It's Wrestle Life Radio. This was the WWE year-end review / what, MVP of the year? My name is Matt Sin. You can follow us all on Wrestle Life Radio on Instagram and Facebook, and Wrestle Life Pod on Twitter. Kyle, where can they find you?
On Instagram at Kyle.Polly.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Wrestle Life Matt. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. We hope you have an absolutely wonderful holiday season, and we'll see you next year.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year. Happy holidays.
All of them.
Yes.